The recording has started, so whenever the chair would like to go.
Welcome to Planning Commission for March 8th. We're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner Moss.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, as is custom, we're going to have a moment for any public comments on any item that anyone wishes to address us for. All right, seeing none, we'll move to agenda item 3, consideration of an amendment to City Code 10-1-46 and 10-11-3. And just as an outline, we're going to have the staff present, then we'll have the applicant if they're here, we'll have an opportunity for any questions, then we'll have a public hearing, and then discussion. So take it away, Mackenzie.
Okay, so this application before us is a code amendment to amend City Code 10-1-45, which is the land use title. Chapter 1 has the definitions and a whole bunch of other provisions related to specific uses. In addition to that, this is to amend Title 10, Chapter 11, Section 3, which is our land use table. The reason this application is before you is because a company who wanted to open up an adult daycare facility in our commercial shopping zone was basically turned down by the city because services for the elderly and persons with disabilities, as listed in our land use table right now, is just not allowed. It's not conditional, it's not allowed. So because this was brought to our attention, the whole social services section was also brought to the staff's attention, and we didn't necessarily understand why a lot of those uses were not permitted, especially in zones that were commercial. For that reason, we told the applicant that staff and the DRC would support a code amendment to bring this up and allow these types of uses as permitted in all commercial zones. And that's exactly what ended up happening. So the DRC reviewed the proposed amendment and supports amending the code to allow for all of the social services listed in the land use table to be permitted. And we also would like to create a new line in the land use table specifically calling out adult daycare facilities. And then in addition to that, Title 10, Chapter 1, we have also made a proposed amendment that will basically regulate commercial daycare facilities in a way that we would maybe do that if it was a conditional use. So we were trying to think of conditions that could or would have been placed had this been a conditional use permit coming before us. And then also, as part of this update, in our definitions chapter, most of these uses were not even listed. The only ones that were about daycares. And so staff ended up seeking the definition revisions from the, Sherry, help me. Oh, NAICS, which is a North American Industry Classification System. It's what the census uses. And so we just basically copied their definition straight over, and that's where we're at. So maybe we'll just start with the first part of this with the definitions. Did any commissioners see anything with the definitions that you noted?
I just have a quick question. When we were looking at the code before to like update the conditional use permit or the conditional uses, were we also looking at the NAICS? Is that what we were? Okay.
Yes.
Awesome.
That's, I think Ron was one that suggested we go back to that. And so we're trying to, we will eventually do all of our uses and kind of reformat them so they're either permitted or not permitted and have the special circumstances like we did for commercial daycare facilities. That's not happening yet, and we will talk about that later in the meeting. This was just, we wanted to get this specific business the ability to operate as soon as possible. So I want to go back for the commercial daycare services. Like I said, this is just what the DRC has proposed as potential conditions,
standards
that may be required to mitigate any potential issues that could come from this type of business. I did notice I had one spelling error in saying even instead of event on line 4. Is there anything else you guys saw? Or any questions? Okay. And the last thing I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, hi, it's Ron. I'm having a little bit difficulty hearing you. What section are you talking about now? I know you were earlier talking about definitions, but what are you asking about specifically now?
How do I make him hear me better? Maybe take one of those speakers? Hold on, Ron. Should we do that?
Ron, can you hear me?
I was going to turn
the
volume up.
Oh, I can hear you really good now. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just going to take this. And sorry, everyone, we are using a new system. Okay, Ron, we're talking about the proposed amendments to Title 10, Chapter 1, Section 46, which will create standards for commercial daycare services. Did you have any comments on that section?
Yeah, I did. That's what I wondered whether you were talking about. So my comment would be, you know, I appreciate the fact that the conditions and requirements are conducive to trying to, you know, not have traffic disruptions and so forth. But, you know, any of you who've seen me in action before know that one of my concerns is always safety, and particularly the safety of the clients that would be serviced at these facilities, the kids and so forth. And so when I look at, you know, subsection B in particular, I'm wondering whether we ought to be talking or considering fencing. You know, if there was outdoor seating areas or play areas used by children, whether we would want to require some type of fencing. You know, when I think about commercial shopping, I think about a lot of traffic coming and going. That's what people tend to do. And some commercial shopping areas can be very congested and very busy and very difficult to navigate. But anyway, that's a thought.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ron. I think we didn't talk about it as our DRC. I definitely think that if the applicant of this application is willing to speak, it would be interesting to hear her thoughts on the fencing requirement and if it would be necessary. I don't think we've required it for any other daycare we have in our city.
And what about the state regulations? Because these are regulated and licensed by the state of Utah, the Department of Human Services.
Pretty heavily, too.
Very heavily. They have a lot of more requirements than we have right here. And yeah, in fact, we had a bill passed that prohibits us from regulating daycares.
Let me see really quick.
And how they
I'm
operate.
Not gonna pronounce your name right.
So we'll see doing. How that's gonna play
this
out.
This is Ron. Ron, the applicant is here and she is very familiar with the state requirements, and so I'm gonna let her answer your question.
Hi, Ron. I really appreciate your concern. It's definitely something that we've also, as a team, as owners, we definitely take those into consideration. We do have a plan in place. It is state requirement for us to have a safety plan set in place where we see fit to create fencing around areas. We will do so. There are commercial shopping centers, specifically the one here in North Salt Lake, where it is a lot lower traffic area than, say, a City Creek Mall or, you know, down the road right off 2600 West or 2600 South. It's not such high traffic area. However, if we were planning on putting something in that location, which we aren't, we would definitely entertain the idea a lot more. Our facility is only planning on facilitating up to about 10 to 15 clients at any given time. And that's if we're fortunate enough to gain those types of clients within our facility. But as far as the safety regulations that the state does outline in their requirements. It is something that we have studied heavily. So like I said, we will if we have to, but there is actually, if I could just draw your attention to this, the daycare facility that's literally about three doors down, there is no fencing in that area, nor is there a backyard area that is fenced off. However, if we do, you know, if we have the blessing of expanding and growing that specific facility, I can totally see a need for the fencing, and we will then, navigate that idea. But as of right now, there's really no need for it, because we have an example, that of a daycare that's literally three doors down. They do share a larger space, but they also take in more clients, if you will. But this specific location, we're not anticipating that problem. But we will definitely, we're not afraid to entertain that idea, though.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you for that explanation.
Yeah, thanks,
Ron. Since we're talking about generic regulations, we're not necessarily, but just kind of talking about your specific instance, but which commercial shopping zone are we talking about for your facility?
Next to Sunshine Cafe.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
Ron.
Okay, so anyway, Sherry and Mackenzie, the only thing I'm going to say is there are facilities like KinderCare on Highway 89 where they do have fencing. So I don't know. I stand by my concern that that's something that we need to think about. And if it's prohibited by state regulations, then that's a bad regulation.
Yeah, the state can the state regulates, or Department of Human Services regulates these types of facilities. And when a facility does have outdoor space for the clients or the children to play in, there are fencing regulations that are covered by the state regulations.
As part of their safety plan that they have to submit.
Part of their safety plan.
So I think the state covers that more than we do. And I did, there was multiple times when I was researching the state's code and trying to put this one together where it was just reiterating what was already in the state's code. And so that's why one of my lines is just referring back to state licensing, because that tells me they've gone through the procedures and met all the requirements. But we definitely can explore.
That sounds good. If the state regulation requires it, that seems prudent. If it prohibits it, that seems irresponsible to me. If we have facilities in the city that don't have fencing, then maybe they should. I don't know, maybe that's a code enforcement question for someone. Anyway, I'll stand down at this point.
And just to clarify, Ron, what I was referring to as the state is that they passed a bill that prohibits municipalities from imposing additional rules above and beyond what the state requires for the state licensing. Like, we can't any longer say that a home daycare is limited to 8 kids. They hold the authority over how many kids a daycare can have, how many they can be licensed to have. So those types of things. So essentially the bill was limits this, what the city can and cannot regulate.
Sure. Yeah, and again, at the end of the day, if we have peace of mind knowing that kids can't get out into traffic or into commercial shopping zones in the midst of traffic, whether it's normally a busy area or not, I'm fine as long as we're trying to come down on the side of safety.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Before I wrap up my presentation, I just wanted to touch on the last item of this code amendment, which is the actual land use table found in Title 10, Chapter 11, Section 3. As you can see here, I basically just made in all the CS and CG zones all of these services permitted, and then made them just not permitted for the manufacturing zones. We did discuss that in DRC, and in the end, we just determined that having daycares next to our industrial uses is maybe not the best idea. There's those big trucks, all sorts of other components that may be problematic. So that was the decision there. And I'm happy to answer any questions you guys have or take any recommendations on this code. So
these uses wouldn't be conditional.
They would be permitted, and if it happened to be a commercial daycare facility, we would use what we just discussed to make sure it's operating in the best fashion possible. Anything else?
I do want to make one comment on this one, and it's just occurred to me right now. The changing the child daycare services to a non-permitted in the MD zone, we have child care facilities that are in the MD zone.
So
on
would they
Redwood
just be
Road. That would make them non-conforming if we change that to an N.
So what do we think about that? Because that was what we discussed in DRC to make them all an N. But if the Planning Commission feels that those uses, say along Redwood Road where they are in manufacturing, if they are not problematic, I guess we totally could change that.
Is our goal not to have conditional uses at all?
The state.
Yeah, it's better to have a permitted use than a conditional use, because as long as you've established the standards, and if the standards are established by the state, then the location specific would be regulated by the state.
I don't want to change any currently operating businesses, so would they be
grandfathered and non-conforming? It would could potentially limit their ability
limit their,
to
their
modify.
To expand.
Yeah.
Or if for some reason they stopped for more than a year, they would lose that grandfathered status or the legal non-conforming status and not be able to operate again, because you have to continuously operate that for at least...
I can't think of where are they?
On Redwood.
Right across the street from Lee's Market.
Oh, okay. There's one. There.
Does the Buddy Bin fall into that too?
Yeah, across the street from Lee's is MD Zone, and that the one that was next to the Family Dollar Store, just north of the Family Dollar
where
Store.
Where the Chick-fil-A pop-up was over the summer.
So we move it back to...
Permitted.
To P. I think so.
Are you guys all in favor of that? Because I can make that change. Okay. All right. So all the table looks correct to you guys, with the exception of the child daycare services going from conditional to just permitted in commercial shopping, general commercial, and manufacturing distribution zones.
Is there any other businesses in the other categories that would be affected that we don't know off the top of our heads?
I don't think so, because we're not adding any new N's here, except for we were adding that N there.
No vocational rehabilitation services anywhere?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Not to the city's knowledge, at least.
I think that's why this has never come up, because we haven't had anybody apply for this type of business in the city to this point. And we did a little, or Mackenzie did some investigation. There's another facility similar to this in Woods Cross, and
Clearfield, and
she found several of them. So for disabled adults or vulnerable persons, this is a valuable service. And I think that probably the reason that a lot of these things were not permitted, it comes from a lot of stigma and from our original code, which is the model code that was adopted by all the cities in the state and then tinkered with through all the years. I think there was a lot of stigma and fear over these types of facilities in your community and what that might mean. When we went through the 80s and maybe into the early 90s, there was a lot of fear. But I think we've seen that that stigma is not founded, and that this is a valuable service to our citizens and our community at whole.
I sure think so.
Okay. I'm happy to answer any other questions, but if not, I'm happy to turn it back over for the public hearing.
So Mackenzie, it's wrong.
Okay.
Can I ask another question? And I want to go back to the child daycare services in the MD zone. So not really having access to our maps and all our information, I'm assuming that in the MD zone as opposed to like an MG zone, we wouldn't have compatibility issues with like chemical accidental release or explosives or anything that would be a major hazard to child daycare. I'm assuming the existing ones sitting around relatively benign things, but is there anyone who's aware of any concern with an MD type of, things that could be there? So you have a child daycare, we permit it, And then the next thing you know, there's another MD use that comes along that might be essentially incompatible because of safety, you know, chemicals, explosives, fire hazards, those kind of things.
That, I feel like, was part of the DRC's discussion. It wasn't just about when making that determination of just saying not permitted. We talked about the large trucks and the traffic in addition to potentially like air pollution. That could be, again, problematic, but I think we did talk about it. I don't know if I have a better answer for that. Do you, Sherry?
I don't have a better answer for that.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from that, our other businesses need to be responsible and contain their impacts on their own property. I mean, I think this can happen. It could happen anywhere, right? If we had a hazmat incident on Highway 89 next to a daycare, it could put them in danger. So I'm not unaware of the incompatibilities, but I can also see that, like MD zones where they're along Redwood Road, you know, or I mean, definitely not the MG zone. The MG zone is entirely the...
Yeah, that's a no. We're not going to permit that.
The only thing zoned MG is the refinery. So we don't want a daycare in the refinery.
I think, Sherry, you make a great point to that, though, in that the other businesses, as they come in, the city is doing everything we can to make sure they are not becoming a nuisance, whether that be odors or pollution, water, groundwater pollution, contamination. We look at all those things when they come through for even just a business license, and I hope we would help mitigate that. But again, like Sherry said, there may be some conflicts between the uses.
So like the butane system that we reviewed a couple months ago, was that an MG zone?
Sorry, Ron. No, that was the MD zone, I believe. The MG zone is quite literally, well, I think there's one little spot that's like the sewer district, but it's the refinery south of 7th
Street.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I don't know. Again, would you want a big child daycare center setting next to a butane refinery system with bulk storage of chemicals and things like that? I don't know. I'm struggling with that.
All right. I know the applicant is antsy to get up here and talk if you want to open it up.
Okay.
Do I have to stand on the mic?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Hi, Ron. It's me again, E2L. So I totally share your concern because I actually used to take my kids to Buddy Bin. So basically what I'm saying is I would... Just to kind of add to that, I would maybe make it a conditional use rather than permit it. Obviously, everything's based on the condition of where you're trying to place it. I don't think anyone with wisdom would place it next to, say, an MG zone. But once things hit airborne, and I know that area right on Redwood, there's a lot of dumping that's happening from the hospitals, if I'm not mistaken. So I share your same concern. Maybe perhaps... just putting it as a conditional use rather than permitting it altogether. All it takes is one person to come in and apply, and because it's permitted, they're not gonna navigate or, you know, share any concerns or really care to address any concerns when they're not required, it's already permitted. So that's just my thought.
Thank you.
So this is Commissioner Moss. We can have conditional uses, we're just trying to limit them with our future. Okay. I mean, I also have reservations about just blanket permitting daycare services and MD, but I definitely don't want current businesses that are successful to have to pay a price for that. So I guess I would lean towards if we're okay with, I mean, I think one conditional use doesn't seem too inappropriate here. I'd probably advocate also for conditional use for that.
Same.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully when we go through the whole thing, there won't be many instances that fall in this and we won't have very many conditional uses, but this may be the small categories that it would be a good idea for us to see that application and be able to limit if it was, you know, had concerns. So let's change it to C.
Or keep it at C.
Oh, yeah, keep it at C.
Got it.
What's the adult care center by Ted's Neighborhood? I can't remember the name of it. Is that not the same thing?
There's where?
What?
Where'd you say?
There's one on Highway 89 with the red roof.
There's one in a residential 400 West. Just east of 89, east. Between Odell and... You don't remember.
I think there's a home daycare up there.
Yeah, that's
different. In a residential zone, but it's in the county. It's an unincorporated county. There is one there.
No, south of there. Okay, never mind.
And I do want to note, just for the record, so that I don't get in trouble, that the facility that is up here next to these folks in the CS zone is a preschool, not a daycare, because I got in trouble for calling it a daycare once. So it's a preschool.
Gotcha. Okay, any other questions? All right, so let's open the public meeting. Is there anyone that has any comments that they'd like to make as part of our formal public hearing? All right, seeing none, we will close the public hearing. Any further discussion on the item?
I'd like to make a motion, Chair. I'll move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the proposed code amendments with the following findings. One, the proposed amendment is in accord with the comprehensive general plan, goals, and policies of the city. And two, changed or changing conditions make the proposed amendment reasonably necessary to carry out the purposes stated in this title, with one edit to keep child daycare services as a conditional use in the MD zone.
Thank you, Commissioner Tucker. We have a motion, a second.
I'll second. This is Commissioner Moss.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Let's have a vote.
Can we repeat the motion?
Repeat the motion. Do you want to repeat it for me?
As written, with child daycare services left as conditional in the MD zone.
Did you get that, Commissioner Jorgensen?
My problem is I'm not, the phone's just not picking it up very well. I apologize.
So the motion was to recommend approval with one edit, keeping the child daycare as a conditional use in the MD zone as presently written in the code.
Thank you.
All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
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 Record note, Commissioner Jorgensen is unanimous. All right, thank you. We wish you the best of luck. All right. Moving to item number 4, consideration of a conditional use permit for Utah Valley Towing. Mackenzie.
Okay. So, Utah Valley Towing has submitted a business license application to perform consent towing practices. Unlike some of the other tow yards we've seen before the Planning Commission recently, they are not a state-registered non-consent tow yard. So they don't have to follow all of the same criteria that some of the others had to follow. That said, they are working towards potentially becoming a registered state impound lot in the future. They are looking to locate to 425 North 400 West in Building 3, which is in the manufacturing distribution zone where motor vehicle towing and impound lots are a conditional use. So in this image, you can see that Building 3 is kind of circled in orange, a faint orange, and that is where they will be operating. Currently, there are four existing buildings on this property, and the two to the west have basically a shared outdoor storage area that is gated and screened from public view, and they basically just slice it right down the middle, and building four, three uses half, and building, I think, four uses the other half. So building three, where this towing company is wanting to locate, currently has a business called Direct Auto Care operating out of it. Direct Auto Care came before you guys back in January of 2021 for a conditional use permit because they are a car dealer, but they also do automotive body paint and repair and maintenance, which is conditional in the MD zone. So the Planning Commission at that time approved their conditional use permit with the conditions that basically they just made sure their paint booth was in compliance with fire regulations and standards as far as fire suppression in the paint booth goes. So as of March 1st, Direct Auto Care has not received a formal business license. However, they have been operating illegally, essentially, because they never actually got their fire suppression system installed. And so they've continued to fail fire inspections. Because of that, the city told Utah Valley Towing that we were going to hold off on bringing their application before you guys until this property was brought into compliance, because we didn't want to make it even more out of compliance or add conditions on a property that wasn't currently operating legally. Last week, the Direct Auto Care actually pulled a building permit, and it was issued to upgrade that fire suppression system. So as of this week, we are just waiting for them to finish work and then get their final inspection from our building department and the fire marshal. And once we have those, their license is good to go, and they will be able to operate legally. And so because we see that in our line of sight, and it's coming up pretty quick, we decided to bring this application before you. So Utah Valley Towing Company is a separate entity. They will work with Direct Auto Care in that they will be towing salvaged cars to the yard that they share with Direct Auto Care, and Direct Auto Care will take them into their possession and then repair them and sell them. That said, during a site visit, I was informed that they, being Direct Auto Care, are also operating as a salvage yard in that they are not only repairing these vehicles to sell them, they are also parting them out. So as you can see in one of the commission or conditions that the DRC is recommending, we have specifically said that Utah Valley Towing shall not act as a salvage yard. In addition to that, the Building 3 is approximately 3,000 square feet in size, and Utah Valley Towing will occupy about 360 square feet of office space, and then Direct Auto Care occupies the remainder of the space. So with the business license application, the Utah Valley Towing Company noted that they will have the hours of operation between 9 and 5, Monday through Friday, a maximum number of employees of 2, and the one tow truck they have will be stored overnight behind the closed and secured gate. So as far as parking is concerned, Direct Auto Care was compliant with parking prior or when they received their conditional use permit application, because there is plenty of parking on this site. We had to reevaluate their parking requirements in order to make it so Utah Valley Towing has adequate parking in addition to Direct Auto Care. So on the staff report, I have created a table that outlines the parking requirements for Direct Auto Care. They are required to have a total number of 8 stalls. And then in addition to that, they are going to be displaying 4 vehicles for sale. And then the rest of the vehicles that are in their possession and not in the parking stalls for guests and employees will be parked behind the building in the gated area. The city doesn't have a parking code for towing yards or impound lots, but the remaining amount of stalls that are available here is 8. And so I met with both Direct Auto Care and Utah Valley Towing, and they showed me how they have split up the parking, and it is in compliance with our code. You can see it highlighted on the plan in front of you. It is color coordinated on how they plan to split up the parking and make that compliant. Now, one note with the tow yard parking, the Planning Commission can set the parking standard for this type of use upon direction from the Community Development Director. And so that's kind of where that's at. Now, with the outdoor storage area, this is outdoor storage, and so it does need to be in compliance with our standards. The biggest thing with that is it needs to be screened from any sort of public right-of-way, which it is by that mesh gate. In addition to that, the applicant told staff that they were planning to store up to 20 to 30 vehicles for Utah Valley Towing's purposes in the back of this area. After a site visit and then doing my own analysis, I found that they can fit possibly 23 vehicles in the area that was designated to them and not overlapping what Direct Auto Care needs for their uses. So the DRC is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for Utah Valley Towing located at 425 North, 400 West, with the conditions that the property may never be used as a salvage yard. The storage of impounded vehicles by Utah Valley Towing be limited to a maximum number of 23, with no single vehicle being stored greater than 30 days. Storage of impounded vehicles must occur on hard, non-porous surfaces, and I didn't touch on that, but these are salvaged vehicles, and DRC had some major concerns about them leaking oil and other fluids into the potentially contaminating groundwater. So that's where that condition comes from, to make sure it's parked on hard, non-porous surfaces. The drive aisles and fire access routes must be kept clear and maintained in good condition, and tow trucks can never be parked on 400 West at any time. And then as part of the condition, we wanted to add that Utah Valley Towing maintain a total minimum of 8 parking stalls for employees and customers only. So those stalls are not to be used for the vehicles they have impounded, only for guests and employees. And then before I wrap up, these are the photos that the applicant has submitted as part of their application, showing what the front of the building looks like, and then that gated area. And then this is from my site visit. So you can see they do have a layout that does follow the plan, the storage and parking plan I showed you before. It seems that they have been keeping the drive aisles pretty well clear. They will be storing vehicles in tandem with each other, but the applicant has no concerns with that because they have a forklift on site and a tow truck that they can maneuver vehicles around as needed. And that's a wrap. Does anyone have any questions?
Yes. This is Commissioner Moss. I apologize. I'm a little bit out of my element here, but I just want to recap and clarify. So Direct Auto Care currently occupies that, and they're out of compliance until they install their fire suppression system.
Correct.
However, Utah Valley Towing is independent from that, so we don't necessarily have to wait until Direct Auto Care gets that under control. We are okay to have
be
a condition.
They are independent entities and companies. They just happen to work together and support each other's business. So it was more so we didn't want to make this property not even out of compliance, because a conditional use permit isn't out of compliance. And maybe Sherry can help me describe what I'm trying to say.
I think what we were concerned about is that the property itself had a violation.
Yeah.
And we wanted to see some forward movement in curing that violation. And so now that we've seen that and they've obtained their permit and they've started the installation, we feel a lot better about moving forward, and also having brought it to light with the owners of Direct Auto that this really is important. And the fire marshal went out there and was like, yeah, this is really important, because they were caught spraying without their paint booth, and that can be really dangerous. It could cause a fire or cause damage to, you know, and harm people.
Thank you for that clarification.
And the applicant is here.
Would the applicant like to add anything? You're welcome to come up.
You're welcome to come up. Just make sure you, do you want to add anything?
Okay. You're not required to. Any other thoughts, questions?
So, Commissioner Holbrook, if they do obtain their non-consent towing and impound, is that something that once again comes before the Planning Commission?
No. So the only reason that's even brought up is because in order to be a state-registered impound yard, they have to have a whole assortment of things, like a sign that's a certain size with certain text size. There has to be like barbed wire on the top of the fence and all these different requirements that, yes, we will want to be aware of through a sign permit and things like that, but it does not need to come back before the Planning Commission.
All done on the staff level.
And it shouldn't make too much of a change to the actual use of this property specifically. Sometimes those requirements do cause some grief for the property itself, but I don't foresee that with this one.
Chair would entertain a motion. It's your first one. Go for it.
Go for it. The long one. Commissioner Holbrook, I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for Utah Valley Towing, located at 425 North, 400 West, Building 3, with the following conditions. One, the property of 425 North, 400 West may not be used as a salvage yard for vehicles to be dismantled, and this business shall only operate as a motor vehicle towing and impound lot as defined by city code. Two, storage of impounded vehicles by Utah Valley Towing LLC should be limited to a maximum of 23 vehicles, with no single vehicle being stored for greater than 30 days. Three, storage of impounded vehicles must only occur on hard, non-porous surfaces. Four, drive aisles and fire access routes must be kept clear and maintained in good condition at all times. Five, towing trucks shall not be parked on 400 West at any time. Six, Utah Valley Towing must provide and maintain a minimum of 8 parking stalls for employees and customers only. All stalls must be striped prior to issuance of a business license.
Thank you. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second. This is Commissioner Moss.
Thank you. Any discussion of the motion? If no, let's have a vote on the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Commissioner Jorgensen with an aye. It's unanimous. Thank you and good luck. We're now moving to our priorities discussion.
So we met last week, Mackenzie and I and our chair, Brianna, to go over our code priorities that we want to work on this year. We kind of backed into this with the thought of the most important priority is the form-based code, and we'd like to have it adopted in September. So we worked backwards with the dates, and then we filled in some of the gaps of other things that we can work on in the meantime while some of the things are being digested and absorbed in the community. So this is where we started with. On April 12th, we'll provide you all with new copies of the form-based code. On April 12th, we want to work on the overview of what a form-based code is for the new members, as well as Chapter 1, which is an introduction. On April 26th and May 10th, we will work on Chapters 3, 4, and 5, which are the main meat of the form-based code, the sub-districts, the uses, and the buildings, and they all tie together. We're skipping Chapter 2 and putting Chapter 2 on May 24th with Chapter 6 and 7 because streets, parking, and parks all seem to be a better subject and make more sense together rather than having the streets in with the sub-districts and the uses. And then on June 14, having the discussion about the Chapter 8 signs. Then, based upon those meetings with you, we will revise any of the code that needs to be done during that time and prepare some outreach. We're planning to do a joint work session with the City Council on August 3rd, if they're agreeable to that. August also has 5 Tuesdays. Is that right? Is it 30? Is the 30th a Tuesday? I don't think it wouldn't be right. That number wouldn't be right because it would be... That's 27 days, so that's not 3 weeks later. August 30th. But what is, when we have August 3rd, I think. Oh, August 3rd is not, oh, is a Wednesday. We were thinking we would have, that's right. Okay, so August 3rd is a Wednesday for that joint work session, so that doesn't interfere with any planning commission or city council meeting. And it also doesn't interfere with a primary election should that happen in this state. It won't happen in this city, but there could be a primary for other elections. And then have an August 30th webinar for our public open house. Hold your public hearing on September 30th with a recommendation to City Council, and hopefully they would adopt it in September. So the other codes that we want to fill in and work on in the meantime, in the background, and kind of the low-hanging fruit that we can put together would be the sign code, which we want that to come right after. We've talked about the signs in the form-based code in chapter June 14th. We would work on that, on the sign code during July, because I think that that's going to get at the meat. We know that the sign code in the form-based code is drafted a lot better than the sign code we have, and so that will spur that discussion with you about what you like about that sign code and where we might want to implement it citywide, what features of the sign code that we want to use elsewhere. So that's why we put that in there with a public hearing and planning commission review in August, and then September 6th City Council adoption. We'll also be working over the summer months on the parking code and putting that in the same time frame with the sign code, and then begin work on conditional uses. We'll do that whole, what we wanted to do is go through the table instead of the painful thing that we did last time when we were going through the table line by line. I think we want to go as staff and go through the whole table and make recommendations, and then we can just discuss what those recommendations are, which things to make permitted, which ones to make not permitted, and the standards for those, because then we can really use the NAICS.
It props me up every time. I don't know.
Hey, that's one acronym I can get. I don't know why. I can't even get other ones. But anyway, we will work on that, and then we will start discussions on those in October. I added this number 5 to the bottom of the list, and this just came up today. Because in our department head meeting, we were notified from Weber Basin Water that they will be only delivering 60%, or they will be cutting 60% of our water allotment. So we're going to be getting 40% of our water. I suspect that the council will be directing us to look a lot closer at our landscaping ordinances and the abilities to do xeriscaping, and then also some standards to do them. Because I think that's one of the biggest problems with the xeriscaping that I personally have, is that we say we allow xeriscaping, but we don't say what that looks like or help people understand how to do it. Because I think people need a little bit of guidance. I don't have the knowledge to guide them, and so I'd like to have some code that helps them, or at least some best practices documents that they could use and some resources so that they can get a good design. If they're going to go and do xeriscaping, we still want it to be nice in our community. We still want it to feel good and we want it to be something that just doesn't turn into weeds and becomes a code enforcement problem. So I know that's going to be squoze in there somewhere based upon that discussion that I had earlier today. Do you have any questions about the schedule or concerns, or did we leave anything out?
I want to add something. So if you guys have, those of you who already have the form-based code, if you have any notes in it that you want us to consider or even add, you're welcome to give those to us. In addition to that, if you already have the binder and you don't want another binder, I'd be happy to take that from you and just replenish it with the new information, so you're not just being bombarded with a bunch of them. But that's totally up to you guys, and I'd be happy to give you a new binder with the updated code.
And we'll provide you with the electronic version too, if you prefer that to the paper version.
Very nice. Nice job with the schedule. Very thoughtful. This is awesome.
And my only thought.
Hey, Sherry.
Oh, go ahead.
Sherry, it's Ron. That's an aggressive schedule, and I appreciate all the good work. I applaud all of it. I think we talked at one point about the xeriscaping before revisiting that, so that makes sense to me. Sounds like we're going to have some ugly-looking lawns. Now, one other thing that had come up, and maybe you can comment on it, we're pretty much infilling and redeveloping at this point, but we do have extensive geohazards provisions in the codes for things like seismic and other hazards. We've gotten into discussions when, like, new subdivisions have been proposed on, some of the mapping that's available from the Utah Geological Survey and their fault rupture zones and all that. And I think we had the discussion at some point we wanted to try to update the sensitive lands overlay map. Anyway, will you comment on that and whether you think that's something that should be a priority or not?
I think we have a really good geologic hazard code right now. We probably do. It would be beneficial to do some update in adopting of the actual maps that go with those sensitive lands overlay zone. I think we have a lot more information. So I think that we can definitely look into that and put that on the schedule here. We'll try to figure out where to put it in. I need to do a little bit of research with the geologic survey and figure out what the best way to get a map would be. I'm not worried about too much more development pressure, at least in the foothills. From this point forward, we've done extensive review of both of the two big subdivisions that went in, the Ridge and then Eaglewood Cove 13 through 15 that are being constructed right now. And the bigger part is the part for the individual lots when they're built, and we have the standard now where they have to provide the individual geotech letter before we issue a building permit to make sure that it is a good lot to build on, that they haven't found any additional hazards on those lots. What happens with geohazard surveys is they go in and they do, they drill holes and take samples, but dirt can change in a matter of, 10 to 50 feet. It can be completely different where they didn't test. So that's why we do require that to do additional study on each lot specific. So I feel like we're covered there, but I do think that it would be helpful to have those maps updated and in place. So I think we can definitely look at that. I think I can assign that to my mapping long-range planner to help us pull that together.
Thanks for that perspective and comments. And I do think that the Utah Geologic Survey, with obviously from what we looked at on some of those subdivisions and things like that, they have an extensive GIS system, a lot of risk management information about that. So I would hope that they could actually be pretty helpful on that. I'd be surprised if they couldn't. So if there's anything that anybody on the commission can do to help with that, let me know. But anyway, thanks for your comments.
I was going to say that I remember from when we did this before that the scheduling the joint was a little bit tricky. So I would just, if there was one thing on there that you'd just forego in the effort to get it done, it would, if you run into any problems scheduling that joint session, I would say scrap it.
And we thought we might have more success with it if we did it over Zoom.
Yeah.
And that type. And we will have a better facility. We'll have a better setup as of March, the end of this month. They're actually coming to install our new audio system where people can participate via Zoom and you all can see them and they can see you, and we can interact a lot better and have the capabilities to do Facebook Live, and it won't be analog. It'll actually be technology created in this century.
Okay.
Which is always a good thing.
But then we couldn't do themed food for each night, you know, because if you say if the buildings is the meat of the thing,
and mashed potatoes would
streets,
be like
if
the
you
sign
to
code
have street tacos on that night. I'm just saying.
Well, it is Tuesday, so we should have tacos sometime, I think.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for putting this together, and I'm super excited for number 5, the landscape Xeriscape drought response.
Yeah, so. I think I'm going to rely on your help with that because you have some good experience.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there might be a real push for that come June, July.
Yeah,
July.
I have a feeling that there's going to be
a
push
out
for that in April for me to get going on that. Because I think they said that they were even going to delay the water delivery like into May, where we've traditionally started our irrigation water on April 15th. It may be a month later.
Wow.
I would love any recommendations. That's not just lava rocks everywhere. That's all I can think about.
Yeah.
I know that's not it.
So right now our code basically says that there just has to be some form of vegetative material in the park strips. And so I do get calls frequently, at least a couple times a week, about people asking what our code is. And I found that USU has an extensive list of drought-tolerant plants. Catherine's smiling. Am I using the right thing?
Yes, you are. USU is like the number one best practice resource for Utah landscaping. So
and I
amazing.
Have been directing residents to that and saying, pick a bush that doesn't need you to water it, you know? And so there are resources out there that will make our job a lot easier.
And I'm also kind of excited about what Toll Brothers is doing, because as an HOA, what they would like to do, and they at our last meeting said that they were going to have their landscape architect come up with like 3 designs for park strips that are xeriscaped with certain types of plants, kind of show an example to their homeowners to say, hey, pick one of these designs because we know these plants will survive. We know that this is the right spacing. We know that this is, you know, how much water they will use or won't use. And I really am excited to see that, because I think that's a valuable tool that we could maybe put into our code, or at least into a best practices pamphlet to give people, or put on our website, and we can refer people to look at that. I think that would be very helpful, because I know for me, if I think about my yard and wanting to do xeriscape, I wouldn't have a clue where to even start, and I should have a clue because I've been a city planner for so long. But
what is the process of, because I've researched myself when I've redone my yard, water-wise, you know, the cities that are included to change out your park strip, North Salt Lake isn't one of them, to get those financial incentives, is there a way to get the city involved in that?
Yes, I think there is, and that's one of the things we need to research and make sure we're giving that resource to people, because I think that will encourage them to do that. So we need to save water again this year, even though it's still snowing and snowing outside right now, I think.
And do you have anything to report?
I don't think I have anything to report from
the city council.
No. Yeah, it was a very uneventful. Yeah, and I was there. We were at a Zoom meeting, but I didn't have any agenda items, and we canceled our last planning commission meeting, so we didn't have anything go forward to planning to city council.
Those dates on the last slide weren't in the packet. Could we have those sent as well?
Absolutely. I just didn't post it as part of the packet because we hadn't had the discussion all finalized yet, but I will email you guys a copy of this in addition to the form-based code. I'll send you a link to the most updated copy, and then if you all can just reply to it and let me know if you want just a new binder, we'll just do that way. Okay.
Let's review the minutes from February 8th. Anyone have any corrections or discussion? If not, I'd take
it. Look good to me.
With a motion then?
I'll move that we approved the February 8th, 2020 meeting, 2022 meeting minutes for the Planning Commission.
Thank you, Commissioner Tucker. Do we have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Holbrook, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 We are adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.
See y'all.
Bye, Ron. Have a good night. Yes, so that was what our